directement avec des personnes actuellement incarcérées. Dans cet esprit, nous aimerions vous faire savoir qu'on a une ligne téléphonique pour les prisonnières et leurs amis et familles. Vous pouvez nous appeler Collect de la prison de Bordeaux et de la prison Rivière-des-Prairies en composant le numéro 514-876-3748. Encore une fois, c'est 514-876-3748 pour les appels Collect. On a aussi un numéro normal qui est 438-337-8423. N'hésitez pas à appeler ce numéro et à nous laisser un message avec des nouvelles à partager sur l'émission ou un message audio pour vos proches à l'intérieur.
This is Minuit and you're listening to Audio Smut on CKUT 90.3 FM. We are November 3rd and yesterday November 2nd. This is my real name, a new book that is a sex worker's memoir was just published and it has been launched in all the libraries in town, published by Arsenal Pulp Press. Maybe you don't know this, but Audio Smut has been founded by a group of three sex workers more than 15 years ago. We are actually going to be working on a 15th anniversary show that is going to be aired in winter. So if you want to hear more stories and interviews about how the show was created and its history until now, please stay tuned for that show. And this is why we're doing a small promotion for this book that just came out. This is My Real Name is the memoir of Sylvie Brunette, who spent 10 years working as a dancer at strip clubs using the name Michelle. From her very first lap dance in a small town bar to her work at high-end clubs, Michelle learns she must follow the unspoken rules that will allow her to succeed in the competitive industry. Along the way, she and her co-workers encounter compelling clients and unreasonable bosses and navigate their own relationships to drugs and alcohol. Michelle and her friends rely on each other's camaraderie and strength in an industry that can be both toxic and deeply rewarding. Intensely personal, This Is My Real Name demystifies stripping as a career with great respect and candor, while at the same time exploring the complex, sex-positive relationships, queer and otherwise, that make it meaningful. Sylvie Brunette spent their 20s stripping in clubs across Canada. They received a degree in creative writing from Douglas College and went on to participate in the Quebec's Writer Federation Mentorship Program, where they wrote their first book, This Is My Real Name. They are a longtime anarchist who is passionate about medicinal plants and trees, harm reduction, and reading and uplifting other authors. You can find them on Twitter at Syd Brunette Writes and Insta Syd V. Brunette Writes. Check it out.
Early every year, the seeds are growing. Unseen, unheard, they lie beneath the ground. Would you know until their leaves are showing that with weeds all your garden will abound? If you close your eyes, stop your ears, hold your tongue, then how can you know? For seeds you cannot see may not be there. Seeds you cannot hear may never grow.
In January you still got the choice. You can cut the weeds before they start to bud. If you leave them to grow high, they'll silence your voice. And in December, you may pay with your blood. It's all right for you if you run with the pack. It's all right if you agree with all they do. If fascism is slowly climbing back, it's not here yet, so what's it got to do with you? So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, take it slow. Let others take the lead and you bring up the rear. And later you can say you didn't know. The weeds are all around us and they're growing. It will soon be too late for the night. If you leave them on the wind that around the world is blowing, you may pay for your silence with your life. So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth and never dare. And if it happens here, they'll never come for you, because they'll know you really didn't care.
Hello, my name is Mycelium, and you're listening to Audio Smut on CKUT 90.3 FM. It is currently 6 p.m. on Wednesday, the 3rd of November, and I am sitting with Paulina here, who we are welcoming as a host in the show. Today, they will moderate and help with tech, but soon you will be able to hear their beautiful voice in upcoming shows. Today, we are doing a very special last-minute panel discussion about proposed bill number 2, published by the Legault administration and drafted by Simon Jolin-Barrette, presented to the public on Thursday night. We are so excited to have an all-star panel of community organizers. We have Celeste from the Center for Gender Advocacy, Daphne from ASTEC, and Julian from Project 10. So I will now let them introduce themselves.
Hi, I am Celeste Shannon from the Center for Gender Advocacy. I am the trans rights advocate at the center, and I have basically been fighting Bill 2 day and night as soon as it was made available.
Hi, my name is Daphne Baril. I'm the coordinator of ASTEC. It's a buy-in for trans organizations supporting criminalized trans communities in Montreal.
Yeah, my name is Julian Johnson. I am the support services coordinator at Project 10. We're a bind for organization for 2S LGBTQ plus youth age 14 to 25 in the city and around. So yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you all for taking the time to be with us today and for breaking the situation down for our audience. We'll get started with the first question, which is simply enough, can one of you help us break down the situation, do some translation of the legal jargon, and some summary of the effects of the bill if it were to pass, which likely it will since the legal government is a majority government?
Sure. So bill number 2 was introduced last Thursday, so Thursday, October 21st, and it basically covers a variety of things related to family law, but it just happens to also include lots of things specifically involving trans folk. So the problem with this bill is that many of its provisions are very archaic and are stemming very likely from a very poor interpretation of the Center for Gender Advocacy versus Attorney General of Quebec judgment, which happened back in January. So notably, this bill would introduce a new gender marker that runs in parallel to the currently existing sex designation, effectively creating a dual system under which trans people and non-binary people are publicly marked as trans and not just as, say, woman, man, etc. So that is a big problem. And the sex designation, the Jane Barrette is suggesting that it should be reverted back to the 2013 laws or even the laws that have been proposed before then, where mandatory sterilizing gender affirming surgery would be a prerequisite in order to change sex markers. So that has been something that the trans community has been fighting for decades up until the requirement was removed in 2015. So seeing this come back is definitely a huge middle finger to the trans community. Additionally, trans parents will be impacted very negatively by this bill because, first and foremost, a child age 14 and above can object to their parents' gender identity and subsequently receive a birth certificate reflecting that. And the parent marker will be limited to non-binary parents, effectively making it so that if they have to present their child's birth certificate, they themselves could be in trouble. So that's all the provisions covering trans folk. Additionally, this bill is very interphobic, so attacks intersex people's rights by imposing an undefined sex marker, putting the onus on medical practitioners to quote unquote define sex as soon as it is possible to define it as such. And all these things in combination will strongly encourage the very dangerous practice of intersex genital mutilation, which is a practice under which doctors effectively attempt to quote unquote correct a newborn intersex infant's genitalia in order for said infant to quote unquote conform more with the gender binary, which can very likely cause permanent physiological damages, including sterilization, and also permanent psychological damages. So you can kind of see just how this bill would strongly attack the trans, non-binary, and intersex communities.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I think that's a great summary of what this bill is going to do. I guess I would just add that, you know, the judgment that Celeste mentioned that was handed down in January of last year was essentially a case where a Quebec Superior Court judge declared that the Quebec government had to revise its laws, that it had to come up with a way to accommodate trans people changing their set name and gender sex designation, rather. And this bill is the Quebec government's response. So they took this Quebec Superior Court judgment saying they had to accommodate trans people, and this is what they came up with. And so we've essentially been waiting for a while, trans community organizations, that is, have been waiting for a while to see what the Quebec government's response was, and this is it. And so, I mean, I just want to, like, the Quebec government is suggesting that this bill, by giving us a kind of gender identity marker, that they're giving trans people the sort of opportunity to express themselves, as Jolene Barrette put it, those were his words. And, you know, instead what they've effectively done is create a special marker, the gender identity marker, that only trans people will have on their documents. So, you know, this is like essentially, just to kind of put a fine point on it, a marker on your documents that identifies you as trans rather than cis, because no cis people are going to have a gender identity marker on their documents. They're going to have a sex marker. And so creating this new marker for gender identity is essentially a way of, you know, putting this person is trans section on your ID. Which of course is going to expose trans people to employment discrimination, housing discrimination, harassment, physical violence. And this isn't hypothetical either, because, you know, the reason why it's so important for trans people to change these markers on their ID in the first place is because this happens all the time for trans people that have not been able to change their IDs. They experience discrimination in housing and employment. They experience harassment on an everyday basis when they present their IDs to someone and the person seeing their ID can tell that they're trans. Now, so this is a sort of basic protection that trans people have been fighting for, which is the ability to not announce to everyone who has to look at their ID that they are trans. And the Quebec government has essentially decided instead to coerce trans people into getting a surgery if they want that basic protection. And I mean, just to kind of elaborate on the effects. I know that was part of the question, the effects of this bill, should it pass? But I think we really are We are, if this bill should pass, you know, we are going to enter a situation where there are effectively two, like for the purposes of legal rights and protections, there are two classes of trans people. You know, there are trans people who are able to get this sex designation change. Trans people who have had, who have changed what the government calls their apparent sexual characteristics, and trans people who either cannot or do not wish to have that surgery and therefore do not have that legal protection. And so not only is that sort of a devastating violation of their bodily autonomy, but it's also a real risk to trans people's safety on an everyday basis.
And I want to just throw out there once again that like partial recognition is almost like can have similar effects to no recognition at all. Like with the new proposed gender identity marker system, trans folks will still be able to change their legal names, but then they'd still be tagged as trans. They still don't get the same level of protection as cis people do. You can imagine like with an amended gender marker and amended name, but no amended sex designation, a trans person would like, they won't face like dead name attacks unless like that the person in question already knows like the trans person's dead name, but they're still very vulnerable to just being discriminated against in like many different areas, just like how Daphne specified.
Thank you. I absolutely agree. And it bears just to mention that this is really a missed opportunity to address actual trans and intersex priorities, like the abolition of non-consensual genital mutilations on intersex babies, or for example, free and easy access to name change. The more judgment could have really been an opportunity to make our life easier, but it's definitely making it harder and setting us back decades. So let's jump directly to the second question. The Legault administration contends that this bill was redacted in order to serve the interests of the trans community. And in response to supposed requests from us, particularly that of making a distinction between sex and gender. And this strikes me as an attempt to appear to practice allyship without ever actually listening to trans activists and legal experts, despite the fact that we have made many recommendations, officially and unofficially. What is your perspective on that statement of quote unquote inclusivity?
I personally argue that this like attempt at like using like this distinction between sex and gender is a complete misinterpretation of the bill, and really is not really just shows just how either like just how blatantly uninformed or like how blatantly transphobic the Jean Barrette's cabinet is. So in fact, I really believe that this here with them. So by attempting to make this distinction between sex and gender, I mean, it is something that is like applicable at some level. So for example, by treating gender as if it was always equivalent to sex, trans people get constantly discriminated against. So that might have been what Judge Moore meant, but the Quebec government's interpretation is like sex is different than gender and must be logged as such. That was never specified in the judgment at all and goes completely against the spirit of it. Like even the judgment says that trans people, when they are not equipped with appropriate identification cards and documents, are significantly more vulnerable to facing day-to-day discrimination and transphobia. So it's a complete misinterpretation for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty outrageous that the Legault government has presented this bill as essentially a progressive victory for trans people, you know, like this. And you know, it's not clear how, what the intention behind presenting this distinction between sex and gender was. Everyone thinks differently about that. We can't really know, but you know, it's certainly interesting that they they claim to have done consultation with trans community members while presenting this bill. And yet, of course, the response to this bill among trans communities in Quebec was universal indignation and outrage at having not been listened to. I think that ultimately, of course, this bill is the opposite of inclusive. It ultimately it does several things. On one hand, it takes trans people who have not had bottom surgery and essentially makes them into a new category of person for the purpose of the state, by, you know, giving them a gender identity instead of, you know, recognizing them as, you know, as the sex that they have, that they live as. But it's also, of course, with regard to intersex people, created new stipulations that coerce them into surgically altering their bodies in order to conform with the Quebec's government's idea of what sex is supposed to look like. And it's not even clear, of course, what that is. So, you know, it's... And I mentioned before that, you know, Jolan Barrette suggests that this is a victory, a step forward for trans people because they're able to express themselves. But I just want to make it absolutely clear that, you know, trans communities in Quebec have not been asking to be affirmed by the government. They have not been asking to feel recognized by the government. That is not the point. The point is that having IDs which out us as trans is on a daily basis a risk to our safety and well-being. And I think that the government, the most charitable interpretation of what the government is doing is that they misunderstood the Quebec Superior Court's judgment as indicating that the government simply had to make trans people feel affirmed. And in doing what they thought was affirming trans people, they've actually exposed many trans people to a heightened, more extreme form of danger than they were already going to have to endure. And I'm saying this in the present tense as if this bill has already passed. And of course, we hope that this bill will not pass, but yes.
I was just gonna add, obviously, I totally agree with everything everyone's been adding. I think that in my mind, the distinction that's been made between sex and gender is like a purposeful misinterpretation of just like so much work that's been put in to provide that information to folks who are making these enormous decisions that impact our lives so greatly. And working with youth, mostly I'm hearing the perspective of people under 18 who are voicing their concern about this Loi project. And, you know, people are like, this is going to be revealed. This information about me is going to be revealed to people from the hospital to the SAQ, you know, to everywhere. And, you know, to me, seeing that, seeing all these effects, everything we're all talking about, I really fail to see in any way how this could be interpreted as inclusivity, as providing a service to those of us who are here and who exactly, as we've been saying, we're available for there are places available for consultation. There are people, there are experts in these fields, other trans and non-binary folks and intersex folks around us. So anyway, just feels like kind of a slap in the face, honestly. It feels like, very below, like just very unacceptable. So just agreeing with everyone.
Yep, definitely. And the worst part is like community organizations were consulted in the process of drafting up Bill 2, even though we didn't know like what bill it was going to be sandwiched in. The community was consulted back in April of this year on like how she include non-binary folks and just like that. And I really believe that just purposely like attempting to introduce this sex and gender distinction is really like, yeah, I think like it's really difficult for me to assume that this was done in good faith, to be fair, because I really believe that the local government on this end has really thrown out what is the judgment spirit, the whole philosophy behind like trans inclusion by creating this bill, which will affect trans people's rights in a very draconian manner.
Absolutely agree with all of you. I think it's definitely malicious. And I would even go further and call it necropolitics. And especially with the passeport vaccinal, the vaccination passport, which really forces us to even more show our IDs. This is extremely dangerous as a measure.
Yeah, Mycelium, I would just add to what you were saying about the passeport vaccinal that it might be relevant to add as a side note that for people who have been changing their name since the passeport vaccinal was put in place, the Legault government has created an extremely difficult process for having your changed name reflected in your passeport vaccinal, which is of course like crucially important for people who are changing their names. They need that to be part of the ID that they have to show on an everyday basis. This is in a certain way a continuation of a series of Legault policies that have just made it extremely difficult for trans people to have their name and sex marker changes represented on their IDs.
Thank you. Let's jump to the third question. So another notable example of this pretense to solidarity is the plight of legal recognition from non-binary citizens. For example, the X gender marker. What alternatives would you suggest to Bill number 2's sex and gender markers? And further, do you have any opinions regarding the abolition of sex and gender markers altogether for everyone, trans and cis?
Sure. I mean, I don't think, like, I think for a lot of us who have just like the capacity to do our paperwork to the Directeur de l'État Civil, so in Quebec, the M and F were not necessarily our favorite and it didn't work for everyone. So I do know a ton of people who are looking forward to the use of the, and continue to look forward to the use of the X gender marker coming in January. If I don't know, like, you know, if things continue in that direction. So I do know that that is something that some folks were into. And I don't want to necessarily say like, that's not what it is. But I do know at the same time, like, we've spoken about trans folks and other folks have spoken about just the removal of gender markers in general as just an alternative, right? So not just ones that appear on, say, your RAM cue card or your driver's license or, I don't know, your hospital card, but instead, like, just a removal altogether. Just get rid of that on the birth certificate, get rid of, you know, right, like, assigning a sex at birth. These are things that I believe were covered in the, you know, the CGA's legal work. And, you know, that's just an alternative. I think of kind of like gender neutral bathrooms in the way that it's like, yeah, those should exist. People shouldn't, not all trans and non-binary folks and intersex folks should be forced to use them. People can use them if they want, but, you know, it's like, it's nice that that is an option. But I think until then, that would be the next logical step, the removal of the gender markers in general, but definitely not what the hell is going on with this proposed bill. Just definitely not this. So yeah. I guess I'll just say too, as a commissioner of oaths, I've helped like 30 people in the last year change their name and or gender marker. And, you know, people are like interested in doing that, but nobody has ever asked for this. No one has ever asked for a separate name, sex designation and gender marker. No one has ever voiced the need for that. People have definitely voiced the need for an X gender marker, but not the separation.
Yeah, I mean, I, like Julian, I don't want to diminish the importance of the SX designation for some trans and non-binary people, but I'd like to add that for many participants at Aztec, even for whom the X designation would be more of an accurate description of their gender identity than M or F, many of them also fear a similar thing about the X designation, which is that, you know, it will expose them to more discrimination in various spheres of their life, such as employment or travel, because it immediately identifies them as trans, non-binary, or two-spirit. And so, I mean, I guess what I would say, and I also just a technical detail about the X designation as it applies currently on a federal level, is that, you know, you essentially have to, when you get an X designation, you have to, on federal documents, you have to sign a document saying basically that the Canadian government is not responsible if you experience discrimination when you're presenting these documents, or if that designation is not recognized by other entities, right? So, like, essentially, you know, people who get the X designation are, like, required to take full responsibility for whatever form of discrimination they experience with regard to that designation. And I expect that if that designation is implemented in Quebec, it's going to be the same deal. And so I personally believe that the state does not need to have a role in surveying and kind of regimenting and exposing people's sex or gender identity. There's no clear reason for it as far as I'm concerned. And what I've seen at Aztec with our participants is that those markers and having to deal with those markers and reduce the harm that those markers cause, getting the marker on their ID that will cause them the least amount of discrimination and harassment, that creates a world of trouble and headache and bureaucracy, and there's just no reason for it. I think that it's like part of, I mean, one small part of the problem with Bill 2 is that it, you know, it just creates like even more surveillance and bureaucracy on trans people than currently exists, you know, and that's, there's already so much. So, I mean, I think that there's a strong case to be made for removing those designations completely. But when I say that, I don't mean to suggest that it's that or Bill 2. You know, I think that, you know, within the current system, if like the Quebec government is going to insist on having those designations, the most important thing is to make sure that trans people are able to change those designations as easily as possible and in whatever way best suits them and responds to their need for safety, discretion, health, whatever it is, you know, because these designations have huge effects on what services people are able to access, how they are admitted to certain spaces, how they're evaluated by people who are trying to determine whether they, you know, can get housing or employment, you know. All of this have huge effects. And so I think that, you know, when we call for thinking about removing sex designations, we also need to be, you know, calling for at the same time and just as strongly that, like, as long as we have this system, it needs to be as easy as possible for trans people to
move through this system by, you know, changing their sex designations as easily as possible.
Yeah, I would argue even though the Quebec government probably doesn't want to remove like sex designations altogether, because, you know, the Quebec government kind of has its own like quote unquote agenda. I still really do believe that just having the option for no markers, or just like standardizing at least one piece of identity without a marker, would already do such an amazing thing for the trans community. So just even say if all Medicare cards had no sex designation on them, just like Ontario's health cards, this would really help progress rights for trans folks, since it removes one of the two big barriers behind trans participation in society, the other one being legal names.
Let's jump to the fourth question. So along with the disturbing policies introduced regarding trans and intersex individuals, the administration has also announced a much-discussed shift from the Éthique et Culture Religieuse, also known as ECR mandatory course in high school, to a nebulous Culture et Citoyenneté Québécoise, so Quebec Culture and Citizenship course. This is in alignment with previous racist and specifically Islamophobic policies developed by the administration, notably the infamous Bill 21, which targeted visible signs of faith, of course, targeting Muslim women specifically, and the Test des valeurs québécoises, so the Test of Quebec values, whatever those are, which is now a requirement for immigrants. What connections can you draw between the government's racism and transphobia, which is to say Quebec's racism and transphobia, as its citizens elected La CAQ in majority? And specifically, how might Bill number 2 affect Black trans people, Indigenous trans and or Two-Spirit people, and trans people of color? How might it affect trans migrants?
Yes, I just want to mention, I really believe that once again, there's a huge element of intersectionality that is being neglected whenever this conversation about Bill 2 happens. And I really do believe that emphasis needs to be put on just how much more of an impact it's to have on, say, Black trans women of color, or just other trans folks who will be disproportionately affected by the bill. So notably, I really want to also point out just how, for the course itself, so for the Culture et Citoyenneté Québécoise course, from like my own intuition, I can really tell the Quebec government would really not focus on cultural diversity and inclusion and also intersectionality, which of course will just help promote more and more transphobia, more and more of negative discourse happening online. And additionally, I really do believe that this once again will disproportionately affect trans women of color and just other people who are marginalized intersectionally by this bill, and who also have lower income and just less of an ability to just survive on their own, because just not having this income already is a huge barrier for trans folks, as there has been and still is going to still be a trans tax applied to gender marker changes. This alone is already a huge barrier for legal recognition of one's gender, which is a huge barrier for, say, someone who is trans and is homeless. But this, of course, it disproportionately affects trans women of color and just other intersections. So this is one of these situations where like the Quebec government is treating everyone quote unquote equally, but it actually treats some people more equally than others.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would just say that, you know, a huge issue with IDs for trans people is, of course, when trans people are in contact with police. When trans people are in contact with police, the way that when a police looks at someone's identification, that will often change the way that a police officer is engaging with that person. And trans people, particularly trans people of color, particularly Black trans people, experience this all the time, as well as Indigenous trans people experience this all the time. And it is one major reason why changing one's identification can be a crucial form of harm reduction and a basic protection for Black and Indigenous trans people especially. I I guess I'll add and say that Aztec works a great deal with trans migrants and trans migrant sex workers specifically. And, you know, prior to the Quebec Superior Court judgment in January, trans migrants who did not have Canadian citizenship were unable to change their name and sex marker in Quebec. Now, there was a loophole that allowed them to do it sometimes through using the federal system, the federal immigration system, requesting that the federal immigration system would update, would change their files and reissue some kind of certificate indicating that their name and sex had been changed. However, that process was extremely perilous because, you know, once you are making requests for something to be changed to your immigration file, you're entering into contact with the system that for many trans migrants is like causes a great deal of surveillance, like particularly with regard to sex work. You know, if you're a trans migrant sex worker, you know, like the, and you end up somehow in contact with the police, that can eventually affect your immigration file, you know, and so all of this is intertwined. And going through the IRCC system was a real burden for trans migrant sex workers. And ever since January, you know, like that was actually a real victory for trans migrant sex workers in January when the current laws were struck down, because one of the major things that was struck down was the citizenship requirement. And ever since then, people using Aztec services who are migrants have been able to change their name and sex marker through the Etat Civil. And basically this bill, of course, puts that new freedom in serious jeopardy. And I think it would see a lot of trans migrants going back through the IRCC system, which puts their immigration files at risk. And I guess I would just add that one thing that we did see in Bill 2, the one thing that I was happy to see in Bill 2 is that the citizenship requirement was not reintroduced. Community in Quebec.
Yeah, just obviously really agree with everything that's been said. And it just, you know, this element also makes me reflect more on the way that racialized people are able to access healthcare in Quebec, specifically Black folks and Indigenous folks, and also being trans and two-spirit, et cetera. So, right, not only not even talking about like accessing those services when you do have your stuff legally changed on your documentation, but just to say like accessing those people, all of the layers of medical racism and medical transphobia, to get paperwork, to be able to access surgery, to be able to access a gender marker change, all for what, you know? So it just makes me think too, like, the way that racialized people are going to experience this is going to be effing different, and it's going to just further exacerbate all of the things that already exist. As we know, like marginalized folks are just going to get more marginalized through the introduction of this bill. So super worrisome.
Thank you so much. You're totally extremely worrisome. And we have reached our last question. There is no doubt that with the reintroduction of the archaic forced sterilization in order to change our names and gender markers, the administration is attacking trans people's reproductive rights. Why do you think that cis-centric feminist groups, which are usually so deeply concerned and vocal about reproductive justice, are remaining silent regarding this bill? Do you think there is any possible connection between LACDAC and TERF, so trans exclusionary radical feminist groups? To jump on what Daphne said about sex work, usually there is also an overlap between TERF groups and SWERF groups, so sex worker exclusionary radical feminist.
I would start this conversation by just saying that I think there's a lot of misunderstanding among the general public about trans fertility issues and also about the history of forced sterilization in trans communities. I think that it's already in Quebec and in Canada as well, there's almost zero support for trans people who want to have children. You know, that is not part of the provincial healthcare plan here. It is extremely costly. It's extremely difficult to navigate. And I will say especially so for people who are living with HIV, which is, you know, a significant population in the trans community, which faces major stigma when they decide to have children. And I think that, you know, this bill is really reflective of a sort of conservative attitude, which is that trans people should not have families, that they do not have families, that that's not, you know, what they do. And I think that it's I'm inclined to think that this is just a sheer lack of regard for trans people that have families. And yet so much of Bill 2 is actually devoted to changing procedures around trans people who have families. It's about changing, like, for example, the sort of procedures for putting your name, like if you're the parent of a child on your birth certificate and you don't want to be named a father or a mother, you know, this bill allows you to name yourself as a parent, right? So the CAC government is, you know, in some way recognizing that trans people are parents. And so it's actually like, that's what's so chilling about the fact that this form of surgery, which makes it impossible for trans people to have children, is becoming obligatory for all trans people who want to be recognized as, you know, the gender and the sex under which they live on their documents. So I think that it's chilling at the very least. The CAC does not, as we've already discussed, present this law as being anti-trans. And so, you know, that's of course our hope, is that they, you know, will listen to trans communities' response to this bill, and that they will ultimately create a new one which actually does honor trans rights and protections, including trans people who wish to have children.
Yes, I want to draw two things. So first, it's more like on a question of transparency. It's many people, like, often, especially in the activist community, I forget about this, but the truth is about 20 to 40% of trans folks are parents themselves. So this really, so really just not being able to be fully recognized as a parent really can be devastating for the trans community. And that's why trans parents' voices need to be heard, not just trans child-free persons, but also trans parents themselves. And also, I know the Legault government said that they're like open to making changes, but to be fair, we actually do want concrete changes to happen. So won't really be backing down on anything. But really, like, what you want is action. We don't want just words, because like words, they can be filled or they can be blank. We want something that is filled, and they gotta prove it's filled.
Thank you so much for your generosity in breaking down this issue and going deeper. Now that we know more about the bill, what are the concrete steps that our listeners can take right now to contest the bill, both short-term and long-term? Generally, how can they support the trans and intersex communities in this moment?
From my perspective, working with youth, there are a lot of youth who are being put in really awful situations because of this and are just are now experiencing these conversations around them that are so inherently transphobic and awful. So just making sure to stand up for the young people in your lives. And if you're a teacher, if you're a social worker, if you're working with young people, definitely, obviously, everybody inform yourself. But I think that those folks who are working with and for youth, there's responsibility there to make sure youth are able to access services to help them deal with this and learn more information in an accessible way.
I think that there are lots of ways to be part of this struggle. I've been seeing online a lot of push to notify a député and the National Assembly about what this bill will do. And, you know, I think that to a certain extent, it's having an effect. I think that the CAC government is taking notice. I think that, but of course, like the people that still need to be convinced are the CAC themselves. You know, like it's not and CAC does not, for the most part, represent districts in Montreal. And so, you know, like I think that the mobilization against this bill has to find ways of reaching them and also their constituencies as well. And I think that that's like the next big challenge. I think, you know, there are, in the meantime, I think that like the continuing, like making sure that this does not, you know, drop out of public conversation, I think is really important, right? Like so many awful bills get signed into law because people were kind of upset about them at first and then they kind of forgot about them. And the government in power believes that they can just kind of push through the law they want to push through once the public has forgotten a little bit about it. And I think there's a real risk of that happening here. I think, you know, the like public mobilization, whether that is, you know, ultimately, like, I think that if this bill does end up being ratified, I think that street mobilization will be really important. And, you know, before that point, like, you know, God help us if we get to that point. But before we get to that point, if we do, I really think it's a matter of public pressure and pressuring people in the National Assembly as in as many ways as possible.
I encourage folks to really, first and foremost, send an email to your lawmakers and call them. Just tell them why the bill is, you believe this bill is wrong. Specify how long they'll require sterilizing surgery for trans folks to be fully recognized as the gender they are. I think overall, just getting the voice across to your lawmakers is the first thing you must do on this regard, because the lawmakers, they do watch the media. We all know that. It's like you need to pressure them. You need to like actually convince them that this is a serious issue. Because remember, in a very cis normative and cis centric world, unfortunately, the trans community really needs to push in order for their voices to be heard. But it still remains important to just make sure that these voices are heard, because otherwise, we'll just get thrown into the bottom of the garbage bin. So the center has filed a petition with Mao Masi last Tuesday, a legally binding petition, which all Quebec citizens can sign onto. So I'd strongly encourage folks, if they're able to sign onto it, just sign onto it to oppose Bill 2 publicly and to do whatever you can in order to oppose the bill. even though a signature isn't that much, it's already one huge step for the trans community. And I would say in advance, thank you. If you sign the petition, the trans community is saying thank you. It's the least you can do.
Yeah, and I would also encourage our listeners to use the campaign from Le Conseil LGBT, who has like a link that basically you're like 15 seconds away from sending an email. It's already written for you. Just have to write in your email and your postal code. So it's so easy. I highly encourage you to do that right now. We'll put the link to that in the show notes and on our Facebook posts. And I also encourage you to make donations to trans organizations and individuals, both in terms of individual mutual aid and also to all your wonderful organizations that are doing hard work right now handling this crisis, including the three orgs represented today, Center for Gender Advocacy, Project 10, and Aztec. We will also include links to these orgs in the show notes. Do you have any closing statements?
I'll just say it. So we're fighting with you. We're in this with you. Our hearts are beating with you. And if the bill ever passes, we're not afraid to start a lawsuit again. I mean, it is exhausting, but you got to do what you got to do because trans rights, I mean, I know this is said way too often, but trans rights are indeed human rights. Even if it's only for some people, all people are humans after all.
Yes, Aztec is going to be mobilizing against this law for as long as it looms over the trans communities of Quebec. And we are still working together as a team quite hard right now to figure out what services we're going to be offering in response to this law. But there should be more news coming about that soon. We are on Facebook and Instagram, ASTTEQ Aztec, and yeah, there will be more news on that soon, possibly starting with some kind of information session for members of communities that will be, you know, the most harmed should this law pass.
Yeah, and if you are a young person in the 2S LGBTQ plus community and you're looking for support, or you are feeling lost, or you need to answer some questions, or you are looking for a commissioner of oaths, please hit us up at P10, and you can find us on Instagram or Facebook. And, you know, we're excited to be working with other trans organizations in this. We are, you know, in this, unified in this, and it's like, that's an exciting thing, but it's also obviously still like very devastating time for our communities. So, you know, take care of yourself and reach out if you need support.
Thank you so much for your time today and your work in general, outside of this call, your commitment to justice. Keep up the good fight. Freedom is a constant struggle. And yeah, fuck the government. What else can I say? I hope you have a wonderful day. Thank you to our listeners.
They say that freedom is a constant struggle. They say that freedom is a constant struggle.
Free.
They say that
free.
Good evening and welcome to Amanlo, an hour of African current affairs brought to you here at CQT 90.3 FM in Montreal. And I am sitting virtually with Doug Miller. I'm Gwen Shulman. And well, tonight, I'm glad to say we're finally fulfilling a promise we made a few weeks ago. And that is that we are going to focus much of the show on the Tanzanian writer Abdulrazak Gurnah, who won the Nobel Prize for Literature about 3 weeks ago. Big fat surprise to everybody in the world and to Gurnah himself. So we'll give you a little bit of the background on the writer as well as some excerpts of interviews with him so that we all have a chance to explore somebody who up until 3 weeks ago was really relatively little known. Doug, how about you?